Welcome, everybody. So let's go ahead and begin with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. This is the Step 4 and 5 workshop, and thank you to Leslie for being of service this morning up front. Our anonymity, like our abstinence, is a treasured possession. We ask the help of our guests, especially those representing the press or broadcasting media, in protecting the anonymity of the members present or mentioned here today. We hope you hear something at this meeting which you can take away with you and use. We respectfully request, however, that you eliminate any mention of names in reference to members of Overeaters Anonymous and that no unauthorized pictures be taken. The session is being recorded and will not be edited. Anyone wishing to remain anonymous should use a fictitious name. So two Hatters, members affiliated with related facilities or other anonymous programs, are requested to speak only to their personal recovery as the OA member at OA functions to avoid implying endorsement of any outside enterprises by OA as a whole. We also ask that you not record any workshop with cell phones or any other type of recording equipment. The main speaker has 30 minutes this morning, and at the end, we'll open it up. We have time at the end for either personal shares or questions. So during the presentation, if you'd like to consider if you have questions or shares on this topic, I'll go ahead now and introduce Chris C. Chris M. Thank you. Thanks, Chris.
My name is Chris. I'm a compulsive overeater. They asked me to talk about the fourth and fifth step today, and I want to do that, and I need to qualify myself real quick. I loved the discussion just a little bit ago on the third step when she started talking about the third step in the big book and our problem. The purpose of the 12 steps or the purpose of the big book is to solve our problem, to access the power greater than ourselves to solve our problem. So what's my problem? It's important that I get here and I understand that. And I came to Overeaters Anonymous October 1st, 2013, so just almost 4 years ago. And I tried really, really, really hard not to come here. I worked at it for decades to not have to give up control over food, figure out some way to manage it and not have to come to this program. My mother was in Overeaters Anonymous in the 70s, and so I was familiar with it. And if I knew one thing, I knew I didn't want to have to come here. I really, really didn't. So over the last 20 or 30 years, I had gained 30 or 40 pounds, 50 pounds up and down, and I had lost that weight several times. And in 2012, having tried to manage my weight all of my life, I went to a weight loss program and I lost 50 pounds, and I lost that 50 pounds, and I was basically weighing and measuring my food, following a food plan. I was being coached in a weight loss program, and it worked, you know. And then I went into maintenance right after that. And I sat down and I thought to myself, or I was managing my own food plan at the time, and I said, you know, now that I'm counting all my calories, I can have one candy bar after dinner as long as I count the calories, right? And yeah, Chris, that makes sense. You can do that. And I did. I had one candy bar as I went into maintenance after dinner for two whole days in a row. And then I had two, and then I had the whole box after that. And I continued to weigh and measure my food as I gained almost all of that weight back. I've got a chart of me counting my calories, gaining 1 to 2 pounds a week for several months, and trying every ounce of willpower I had, every resource I had. I was a spiritual man at the time, and I practiced spiritual principles, and I tried every spiritual resource I had. I talked to my friends that had weight problems, and I said, I think I got a problem with my weight. And they said, yeah, me too. And then that was the end of the conversation, right? And so around September 1st, having gained all that weight back, or almost all of it back, I said, all right, that's it. I am absolutely done. God, take this away. I'll not eat sugar anymore. I'll do whatever I have to do. I'll count all my calories for the rest of my frickin' life. And I'm done. And I abstained for 30 days. And I was up in the mountains, just like I spent September up in the mountains a lot of times. And I was up at the Safeway, and I was going to the Safeway to get a snack and a DVD to watch with my son at the condo. And I was telling myself, don't buy candy. Don't buy candy. Just get a snack. Don't buy candy. And I walked out of there with three boxes of movie candy, and it was on again. And that was late September in 2013. And what that did for me is it caused me to realize that I was absolutely powerless over whether I started to eat my compulsive foods or didn't. And once I started, I couldn't stop. And I read the doctor's opinion and talked about the phenomenon of craving and how when I introduced my compulsive food to my body, I craved more food. Because I had been abstinent for 30 days. I wasn't addicted. I was abstinent. But that first bite sent it off. The first bite. And I did not want to admit that. But I thank you. And I want to get out. I want to get into the topic. But that's where I'm powerless. So I've got to have a power source that can solve that problem for me. And here's what happened. October 1st, I walked into Overeaters Anonymous. I admitted powerlessness to actual overeaters. I had admitted powerless to all kinds of knuckleheads out there. All right? And they said, yeah, me too. You know, and nothing happened. But I admitted powerlessness to actual overeaters. And something happened. I accessed power. And I have been abstinent since that day. I have had sanity in relationship to food since that day. My food plan that I was actually practicing while I was gaining weight has worked since that day. Okay? So it wasn't a special deal with God. It was admitting powerlessness to human beings with the same problem that I have that access the power. Now, how do I sustain that? Because I'd already proven to myself that was temporary. Right? I've got to get this access to the power. That's why I've got to continue to work the 12 steps. To continue to access that power was given me. This isn't about quitting. It's about not starting again. See, and I would read these stories in the literature. I was abstinent for 10 years and then it came back and I couldn't get back into the program. That scares me. That scares me. Because now that I got abstinence, what exactly am I powerless over? The insane thought that precedes the first bite. That's what I don't have power over today. And without a relationship with a higher power, I'm toast. I'll be back on it, and it'll be back down the road again. See? And what we talked about, when she talks about the third step and turning our life from the care of God, then accessing that power, the fourth step is about getting rid of whatever is blocking me off from that power source. Now, it was given to me by grace the day I walked in here, and it has never gone away. Okay, that's it. That's my experience. I know that doesn't work for everybody. That's not everybody's experience. That was my experience. I admit powerless, and I haven't eaten sugar, and I've followed the food plan since. And I lost the weight again, and I've maintained a 50-pound weight loss from my highest weight for the last 4 years. That's my experience. But I have to continue to work this program. So when I first got here, I picked a guy that had lost 100 pounds, that had physical recovery, had what looked like 12-step recovery, and I picked him as my sponsor. And he said, all right, let's do the steps. I said, all right, tell me what to do. And he said, let's do the workbook. We'll do the OA workbook. I said, fine. And I wrote the steps in the OA workbook. I followed his instructions. I wasn't here to change Overeaters Anonymous. I was here to get the power that I couldn't get by myself. And it worked just fine. I lost the weight. I went through the 12 steps. as it's outlined in the workbook with the OA literature, and my sponsor and I achieved what I came here to do, and I stayed abstinent and went into maintenance after that first year. And now today, my sponsor and I are on the same page in that we work the fourth step out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's the format that we like to work with, and we're on the same page. So that's how we practice the fourth step today. And that's what I want to talk about. You know, she talked about in the previous workshop about accessing that power source, turning our life in the will of God. When I get to the fourth step, I've met some requirements. There's a requirement that I have to be convinced that my life run on self-will can hardly be a success. Okay, now if I haven't admitted that to myself, then I'm not ready to turn it over to God, and I'm not ready to start working on the things that are blocking me off from God. So when we get to the fifth step, it says that the reason we're doing a fourth step, there's three reasons. The reason we're doing a fourth step is that we're looking for a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. Okay? At the very end of the fourth step, it says that by now you've come to realize, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't quote the book correctly, but you've come to realize that God can remove whatever self-will is blocking you off from God. So what I believe today is when I came into Overeaters Anonymous and admitted powerlessness to a group of like-minded people, I accessed that power. It was given to me, and I started doing things that were absolutely foreign to me. I walked by candy bowls, right? I stopped eating when I was full. Miraculous things. I hadn't worked the steps. I hadn't done anything special. I hadn't prayed a certain way. All I had did is come to these rooms. But today, I've got to keep that conduit. I've got to keep that relationship unobstructed. Unobstructible. What obstructs my relationship with my higher power? Resentment, fear, self-will, self-reliance, all those things. Those are the things that block me off from God. Those are the manifestations of self that tell me I am obstructed from God. And I believe if I stay obstructed from my higher power for a long enough period of time, I will have an insane thought that says I can have one piece of candy. And then I'll start again, and I won't stop. And I read these stories in our literature, and I get scared, because that's what they tell me. Everything was going fine, I was recovered, life was good, and then suddenly I have an insane thought. That's what I am powerless over today, is that in and of myself, without spiritual help, I cannot remember to not start eating the wrong foods again. Okay? So, to stay unobstructed, I've got to stay out of self-will. I've got to turn my life in the care of my higher power. And I've got, you know, there's a contract in that. There's a contract in that third step that says God gets to do whatever the heck God wants to do with me in exchange for power. And I'm subservient, and I'm going to show up and do whatever the heck I'm told to do and be of service to all you guys for the rest of my life. You know, that's kind of the gist of it that I'm signing up for. And I like to read the fine print to my sponsees before we get into the fourth step. Right? This is the fine print. This is what you're contracting for and what you get in exchange. And so immediately I get into common manifestations of self. Now, the fourth and fifth step has got some bad press out there, right? We get this idea that it's this huge confessional where we admit every horrible thing we've ever done and everything we're embarrassed. Yeah, that's part of it when we get to the fourth step. But really, if you read the text, and there's 7 pages of text, there's 7 pages of instructions in the original text of the fourth step on how to do the inventory. Now, we're not just looking to get relief when we do this stuff, from our fears, our anxieties, and our anger. We're looking to do some specific things that are promised to us if we do it correctly. We're looking to master resentment, not just deal with our feelings, master it. And what that means to me is when I master resentment, given the same or similar circumstance that caused me to be angry and carry resentment for whatever period of time happens again, I react with neutrality. I react with neutrality. I react in the absence of anger, and I'll give you examples of that in a minute. And when it comes to fear, I'm here to outgrow them, not to walk through them, not to deal with them, not to keep them at arm's length for the moment, but to literally outgrow fear. I have outgrown the fear of abandonment. I have outgrown the fear of feeling shame. I've outgrown many, many, many fears, 100 forms of fear and self-delusion, as it's said in the third step. And that's what it tells me. Make no mistake, this is a permanent solution to these problems. And it promises me that I can immediately start to outgrow these things if I follow the actual instructions to do that. Okay? And then we get into relationships and we look at our sex conduct and our relationship conduct, and we form sound and sane ideals to carry into these situations to improve our relationships, to show up without selfishness and self-centeredness and fear and all those kinds of things. And when our life becomes sane again, those relationships by definition become manageable, and we're functional members of society, not reacting to every drop of a hat circumstance trying to bowl our way through it. So the format in the book, you know, it starts with resentment, and it starts about listing all my resentments. And I personally, when I do a 10-step, I go back to the four columns of resentment inventory. I do four columns of fear inventory. And when I'm working on relationship stuff, if necessary, I'll do the questions and answers in the 7 or 8 questions that's asked in the sex inventory. And everything I'm going to share with you today is verbatim right out of the book, you know, page 64 to 71. Okay, that's where it's at. And two people working a step that use that text, read it, follow the instructions, in almost all cases get results. Get results. You don't have to be a guru or have years and years of experience to read the text and do it. Right? Read it, do it. Don't think about it, just do it, you know. See what happens. If it works, great. If it doesn't, try something else. But that's how it was shown to me, and that's how I take OA sponsees through that stuff. And again, why do I have to do that? Why do I have to go to those lengths when other people seem to be able to get away with anger? They seem to be able to get away with fear. Well, if my resentments linger long enough, they will block me off from my higher power. And if I am blocked off long enough from my higher power, the insanity of food will return. That's it. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what other people can get away with. This promises me that I can't. And when I read these stories about people that relapse after years and years of recovery, I have to ask myself, did they stop enlarging their spiritual life? Did they harbor resentments? Did they say, that's not that big a deal, it's good enough right now? Did they, you know, what did they do wrong? Because I really, really want to know, so I don't do it. Or I do what I'm supposed to do. And when I read the text, the original text of the 12 steps, you know, I believe it, you know. And when I hear people talking about relapse, and I was listening to them talk about fear and resentment the week before, and they don't have a sponsor, they're giving you intellectual thoughts and ideas about the steps when they talk about it in meetings, like, that ain't recovery. That ain't recovery. The recovery is when I get down to causes and conditions. I get down to defects of character. I identify them, they're on paper in front of me, my sponsor has sanctioned them and fed back to me that it feels accurate, and then I go to God to remove them. See, I can't get rid of this stuff without God's help. See, that's the delusion. Awakening and understanding and seeing is not the solution. It's temporary relief, and it's great, it's wonderful. Bing, oh, that's why I'm a knucklehead in that situation. I get it. Well, next week I'm doing the same thing over again. A month later, the behavior's still here. I haven't changed. And I can't change without getting God to do for me what I can't do for myself. God's got to take this away, and I literally have to become a different man and then carry a vision of what God would have me be in the absence of that, into my day and into my future going forward. And then I do 6 and 7, 8 and 9, 10 and 11, and continue to grow in that direction, enlarge my spiritual life. It's a lifelong practice. It's a way of life. So I'm a big fan of this, by the way, in case you haven't figured this out. I believe in it. And just in the 4 short years I've been in Overeaters Anonymous, I've seen miraculous things happen with people that have incorporated these ideas into their lives. It's transformative. So let me give you some examples, okay? Now, if you're not familiar with the format, it is again on 64. There's the big book outlines columns, okay? And I was trained to put the fear inventory into columns as well. So I'll just kind of walk through that. I brought a couple of... I'm careful to give cheat sheets to people because it causes them not to read the text. Okay? And then the cheat sheets become the solution because there's really important stuff in there about... I'll give you an example later, but there's solutions and text.
This is an
art. Yeah. Yeah, it's in our deal here, okay? And I'll probably make it a little bit more complicated than they're trying not to make it complicated. But so I'll give you an example. One of the first resentments that came up in the work that I was doing with my sponsor after I got to Overeaters Anonymous was a business relationship. My business partner and I, he's got this CPA, and I was in a meeting with my business partner and his CPA, and his CPA was trying to get me to sign some papers. Thank you. Sign some papers, and he wanted me to sign loan documents. We've been in business for 14 or 15 years, and this guy wants me to start signing this paperwork. I said, well, no, I'm not going to do that. And he started to push and push and push. I lost my temper, right? I got angry at him, and I got angry at my business partner. And while I'm in the middle of the step work with my sponsor, and so obviously that tells me this is what God wants me to work on. So I had to put this guy's name in the first column, man, and put his name in the first column. Looked why I was angry, because he wants me to sign papers. He doesn't trust me. He thinks I'm going to try to steal from him or my partner. My partner's elderly, and so everybody's posturing for after death kind of stuff in business. But the guy is trying to create his own security and all that kind of stuff, and I resent him for it. What does that affect? Okay, that's where I had, in the third column, I got to ask, what does this affect? And there's 7 things: self-esteem, security, pocketbook, ambitions, makes me afraid. Did I hit them all? Left one up. Personal relations, sex relations. There's 7 different things to ask. And this is not in the text, but it was shown to me that there are actually some prompting sentences that help me figure out what it affects and how it affects. For example, if it affects my self-esteem, I can complete this, the sentence, I am blank, or I should be blank. Well, this affected my security. I need blank, right? Well, what do I need from this guy that I don't even really have a business relationship with? It's very indirect, and I'm going, personal relations, he should trust me, I need him to trust me, my partner should put a leash on this knucklehead and control him, and it's all their fault. And I say, okay, well, what's this affect? It affects my pocketbook, right? It affects my money. Well, I got enough money. How does it affect your money? Well, when my partner's gone, I got to deal with this guy, and he's not fun to deal with, and he does not have my best interests at heart, and that's probably reality. And I said, that's going to affect my security in the future, see? And it's like, darn it, my security is affected, and I'm worried about how much money I'm going to have or not have, what kind of fights I'm going to have 10 years from now, see? So I'm afraid. I'm afraid that I might lose something. I'm afraid I might have to fight for something. I'm afraid I might have I don't know what's going to happen. I'm afraid of the unknown. See? Okay, now I'm starting to come down. So, all right, I hate to admit it. I'm a spiritual guy. I'm a smart guy. I shouldn't be like this, but I am. And that's how it affects me. Okay, now, before I go to the fourth column and look at how I'm selfish and self-centered, there's some questions and some text that says to conclude that other people are wrong is as far as most of us ever got. Right? At this point, I'm still pretty doggone sure they're wrong. You know, and I'm not even so. I may be even incorrect, right? The wrongdoings of others, fancied or real, they could be real bad people, and it could still mess me up. Does that make sense? I could be 100% right, and I'm still resentful, and I can't be there. It doesn't matter whether I'm right or wrong. I'm resentful. I have a spiritual malady. So it says, consider that maybe they're spiritually sick. Uh-oh. They, like myself, are sick too. Dang it, you got me. Because I've already admitted my life's unmanageable. I've already admitted I'm in self-will. I've already admitted I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion. My definition of spiritual sickness is driven by fear, blocked off from God. Okay? I'm afraid, of course, I'm spiritually sick. God's separated from me when I'm afraid. Period. That's all there is to it. Well, what's driving this guy? This is one of the most scared people I've ever known. He is so terrified of what's going to happen in his world. All he's doing is trying to work for his security, which in fact is what I'm trying to do. Shoot. There we are. Two guys with basically the same freaking spiritual malady, right? All of a sudden, my resentment starts to go down, and I recognize this isn't a bad person. This is a sick person. Something happens when that knucklehead that I'm resentful at suddenly changes from the Antichrist into a sick puppy, right? This is a human being with spiritual maladies. I suddenly access compassion for him and for myself. See, boom, something just changed. I've started to actually overcome the spiritual malady. And make no mistake, in order to successfully go through an inventory process or go through the 12 steps, I actually have to overcome the spiritual malady in order to straighten out mentally and physically, and that's why I'm here. Isn't it? I'm here to straighten out mentally and physically in relationship to food and the insanity around food and all that kind of stuff. See, I've actually got to overcome the spiritual malady, which means whatever's blocking me off from God has to be remedied in this process at some point going forward. And if I don't get that done, then my best efforts have not gotten me where I need to be. So I recognize that I'm afraid. I'm going to take that forward into the fear inventory. I start to see that really he and I both are just trying to barter and position and take care of ourselves for the future. All we're doing, I'm 50-some years old and I'm afraid, dang it, I can't do this again. I've spent my career building this business and I got to fight this guy or he somehow threatens it and I lose it. I can't do it all over again. No, that's not true. Where's God in that equation? Uh-oh, the spiritual malady. I just contracted with God, and I promise He's going to take care of me and provide everything I need, right? That's exactly what it says. But here I am fighting for it. Fighting for what I think I might not get or I might lose a decade from now. Okay, now there's a psychological term. That's messed up. That's not right. That's not a God-reliant man doing business. See what I'm saying? That's not a man being of service out there in the real world because I'm driven by fear, even if I don't think I am. All right? So, yeah, I'm selfish. I'm in fear. My actions are self-seeking. I'm trying to posture, maneuver, outthink, outperform this deal. And the bottom line is I'm not trusting God. I simply don't trust God. Right? That's the first four columns. Okay, and that all goes pen to paper. Pen to paper. Pen to paper is a spiritual principle in my world. Between the ears is a fishbowl, and they're all swimming, and it's a mess. Pen to paper circumvents the ego. Pen to paper. I talked to a guy last week. I said, he's in self-will. I said, well, two simple questions to see if you might be in self-will. Has pen met paper? And did you talk to anybody else about this problem? No and no. All right. You're doing it in your mind, and pen is not meant paper. Yeah, you're probably messed up. We don't even have to think too hard about it. Something's not right. Okay? And so I take the fears out of the fear inventory. Fear that I'm not going to have enough money when I retire. Fear that something I have is going to be taken away from me. Are a couple of the fears that I can name in the first column of the fear inventory. And then I look at why I have the fears. Because Chris has always had to outthink, outperform, and outmaneuver and be the creator of his own security all of his life. That's just how I roll, right? And once again, I'm into fear, thinking I'm not, and trying to do this. What does self-reliance look like? The third column of the fear inventory is about asking the simple question, has self-reliance failed? And in the text of the big book, it starts to talk about we're in the business of trusting and relying upon God, not our finite selves. We're in the world to perform the work He would have us perform. I really do know today what God's will is for me and how I'm supposed to do it, and that ain't it. Fighting with that knucklehead over what I might not get in the future ain't God's will and what I'm supposed to be doing today. I'm supposed to be being a service, helping people, bringing peace and harmony to business situations if I'm invited, that kind of stuff. Self-reliance is, I got to posture defensively. I got to manipulate my business partner into firing this guy. I got to act like I'm cool and calm when I'm not. You know, all these things. And then I got to go get a lawyer. And then I got to, you know, that's Chris and self-reliance. What's God-reliance look like? When I get to the fourth column, I literally stop, ask God to remove those fears, and turn my thoughts. Now, this is magical. See, this is where the rubber meets the road. This is where stuff really starts to change. I ask God to remove the fear of not having enough in the future, the belief that I might have this stolen away from me, that I'm unprotected. And I consider those to be defects of character. And then I ask God to remove those things. Literally, it's surgery. I'm done with it. I don't have to think about it. I'm done with it. God's job is now to carve that stuff out of me. That leaves the void. That leaves this void. And if I don't put something into that void, that old stuff is going to creep right back in because there's nothing else to do. That's the only map I got. I'm out of time. So I have to conceive of what I think God would have me be. Well, we know the answer to that, don't we? God would have me trust that He's going to take care of me 10 frickin' years from now. It's none of my darn business. Right? None of my darn business. Be a service today, Chris, and I'll take care of you. That's the plan, right? And I ain't on it. So I need God to remove the fears. I go forward to be a service, trusting God's going to provide what I need, guide me through this maze of problems that could arise, and provide what I need when I get there. Right? Done. And I get up next morning, say the prayer, and carry that vision into my day. I can incorporate it into my 10th and 11th step. It becomes part of my 6th and 7th step. I have to go make amends. I hate making amends to those guys, but hey, guys, I screwed up. I was driven by fear, and I'm sorry. What can I do to make up for it? I got to clean it up. And then I keep going forward. So that's my experience in a real example. So I'll stop there.
Thanks to Chris for his experience, strength, and hope today. I did just want to point out, if you registered early, you have these packets in your car, in your bag. If you want to get yours out, there is an inventory sheet, third from the back. And while we're doing that, is there a brave soul that would like to share? Lori, come on up.
I have a question.
Great.
Yeah, question.
I'm not that brave. I have a question. My question is, you said there were two questions you asked about the pen to paper. The first was, have you put pen to paper? What was the second one?
Have you talked to anybody else?
Have you talked to anyone else? Okay, and then my other question was, I'm really curious what happened after you talked to your business partner. I mean.
Oh, we're fine.
Okay, good.
Case in point,
I met with him yesterday, and I talked about how do I know I've mastered resentment, how do I know I've outgrown fear. So this was 3 years ago that all that happened. The guy came up, the CPA came up, and he started to tell me about his problems that he's having with the CPA now. And I had no feelings and nothing negative to say. It's like, so he's not my problem. He really isn't. And yesterday, literally, I had no issue with the guy. And I didn't have to badmouth him.
Can we stay there? I just have a question. When you were talking about affects my, you were saying security is I need. That's the. But what was it right before the first?
So I use prompting sentences for all seven areas. And seven areas, and I've got a few handouts I can give to a few people, four or five. But self-esteem, the prompting sentence is, I am blank or I should be blank. Security is, I need blank. Ambition, I want blank. See, that helps me learn the difference between wants and needs, which I got way confused. Personal relations are non-romantic relationships. People are blank. People should be blank. Sex relations. My partner, lover, wife, girlfriend, boyfriend, husband is blank or should be blank. And then fear is, name the fear. Fear of blank. Okay. And pocketbook is just affects dollars. Did I cover them all?
Thank you. Can you give me an example of self-esteem?
Sure.
In this case, I'm fearful, and that's not what you would probably say.
Okay. So in the example I gave you, a self-esteem would be, he doesn't trust me. Okay. I am a liar. I am untrustworthy. That affects my self-esteem. And here's what happens. If I actually believe that, if I've actually believed that I'm not always honest and somebody calls me a liar, you know what I feel? I feel shame about that. The internal belief that I already know I'm not always honest, the external validation of somebody saying you're not an honest man triggers shame. Okay? Conversely, if I know I'm a trustworthy person and somebody says I'm not, you know what I feel? Nothing. I don't feel anything. If I don't actually believe it, I don't have a reaction to it. If somebody comes in and says, Chris, you're really, really short. You should be embarrassed to be short. I'm going, maybe on an NBA basketball team, but I'm tall enough. I don't feel it. Even if they're trying to hurt my feelings, they have intent. Nothing. Right? But 50 pounds ago, if somebody came in and said, you're fat, heck yeah, it's on. Because I believed it. And I believed all that stuff. You're unlovable, you're ugly, oh, let's fight. Even if they didn't mean to do it, I still want to knock them down. My shame, my reaction to these circumstances has more to do with who I am than it does with who they are, what they say, or even their intention. And this inventory process that I just talked about you tells me the truth about what I believe, no matter what I think. If I react with shame, I believe it, even if I don't think I do. I'm not a fat man, but I still react with shame. I believe I am. That's it. If I don't react with shame, yesterday, the guy is a big problem in my business partner's life, and he's going to be a problem for those guys down the road. I'm not afraid of it. I'm going to be taken care of. Right? So I didn't react with fear. That tells me the truth. Today, I trust God. Tomorrow, I might not. Today, my reaction tells me the truth. If I react with fear tomorrow, I'm back on the inventory. Right? That's the way of life here. I'm not here to never, ever experience resentment, to never, ever experience fear, to never get selfish and self-centered. It's about how quickly I can go to the solution and get out of it. Because again, why do I have to do that? not so I don't get into pain and need to medicate my feelings, so I don't get blocked off from God and the insanity of food will return. It promises me that. It promises me that if I get disconnected from God long enough in self-will and self-reliance, the insanity of food will come back, and my brain, that's not functional, will say, Chris, you can have one bite. And it'll be all right this time. As long as you write it down. As long as you count the calories, you can stop after you start. That's insane. Absolutely insane.
Another question. In the fear inventory, you phrased the third column as how the self-reliance fails.
Uh-huh.
And the fourth column of God-reliance, how did you phrase that?
So the way the book says it is it says that we turn our thoughts to what God would have us be. So I literally, this is hard, because we're really good at seeing what the problem is. But what am I if I'm not a scared man? If God literally does his job, removes the fear, what am I? Well, I trust God. It's exactly the promises of the third step. I trust God's going to provide what I need. You know, that's my concept. But what's really cool is that fourth column of the fear inventory becomes a blank canvas in which we start to create a concept of God that can grow. You know, I start out with, well, God would have me trust him, I'm going to be provided what I need. That either works or it doesn't work, based on how I react with fear going forward. If it doesn't work, I come back to the canvas. I redo the inventory, look closer at the fear, and come up with a bigger concept of God. I was talking to a guy this week about Alzheimer's, being afraid of getting Alzheimer's because there's a family history. I said, well, your God isn't big enough to include Alzheimer's right now because that's a reality of life. So where is God in Alzheimer's disease? Where is God? My brother committed suicide in 1986. I had a huge problem with trusting God in relationship to life and death with people I love. Well, I had to expand my concept of God to include a world where people die by their own choice sometimes, darn it. And the answer is it got nothing to do with me. I could tell you what my concept is, but more importantly is how I got there. And it's that last column of fear. What would God, in God's world, people die. So it's got to be okay. Somehow, it's just not okay in my world. Because it might be my fault. I might die of grief. Somebody might blame me. Those are all the selfish reasons. I might not ever love again. Yeah, no, that ain't it. Plenty of people to love. Right? Everybody has a right to live or die. We have a right to eat ourselves to death. We are entitled to that, and I honor that. I truly do. If you want help, I'll be here to help you. If you don't, I honor your choice. I honor your choice to die. And I had to stop and honor my brother's choice and trust in God's world. I and you are entitled to choose to live or die. Period. And if I want to align my will with God's will, I've got to get on his book, on his page.
When I first worked that, that fourth column became a prayer.
Uh-huh.
God help me too. And then I would put it out there and create my canvas, as you said. But that's how it came up.
Great.
Yeah, we just have a moment left. Any last minute burning desires?
Thank you.
If you'd like to stand, please, and we'll join hands for a moment of silence.